Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hello, everyone. Our show is not live today. We're going to play a few of our favorite recent segments. The first two segments are about racial bias and the SATs. The first take is from Jay Matthews, who writes the class struggle education blog for The Washington Post, who found evidence of racial bias in the test. And then we'll play the rebuttal, recorded a few days later, from Lawrence Bunin, who oversees the SATs for the College Board. We won't be taking any calls, obviously, but our comments page is always open at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and let's talk about the SAT. Even though school is out for summer, the Scholastic Aptitude Test that people love to hate, that all-powerful indicator of a high school student's worth when it comes time to apply to take the next step in their academic careers, it's often been criticized for not being an accurate measure of what students actually know. Now, a study published last month seems to confirm some controversial findings from 2003 and sheds light on what seems to be racial bias in the test. This study accounts, researchers say, for white students doing so much better than black students on the verbal section of the exam, even though black test takers tend to answer more of the harder questions correctly. To discuss this finding and what it might mean for students and for the nation's top universities, we're joined by Jay Matthews, who covered the first study in 2003 for The Atlantic and who writes the Class Struggle blog for The Washington Post. Jay, thanks for coming on WNYC.
You're welcome, Brian.
So what did this study actually find?
This is the work of a rogue researcher, a guy named Roy Friedel. He used to work for ETS, the Educational Testing Service, which you know used to be the firm, the nonprofit that ran the SAT. And he got really interested in what he was seeing with difference between black and white students, particularly in the lower end, the kids who didn't do so well on the exam. But he noticed that that slice of the student body who were taking the test, black kids were doing much better on questions that had a lot of school words in them, you know, long words, Latinate forms that you don't hear at home, and white kids were doing better with the words that had a lot of simpler words that you hear at home. His theory is that the words that you hear, common words, we have different interpretations for. The word bad in some neighborhoods means bad. In some neighborhoods, it means good. The word slick in some neighborhoods means slippery. Other neighborhoods, it means fashionable. And so those simple Anglo-Saxon words were causing confusion, and that the test, his research seemed to show, was biased against black kids, and if they were given more questions of the sort that had a lot of long words in them, they'd do better on the test. The ETS and the College Board just rejected that out of hand, but the hero, the white knight for Roy Friedel, was a guy named Richard Atkinson, who was then the president of the University of California system. Atkinson is also a cognitive psychologist. He said, you know, this makes sense to me. Atkinson's also the guy who single-handedly forced the SAT to change the test 7 years ago. That's why we have a writing sample now in the SAT and some other changes. So he's a big guy. So he ordered, Waxman ordered a study of this in his office, and it takes researchers a long time to do these studies, but they've come out with their work. Two of his best people at Berkeley looking at Friedel's results saying, yeah, Friedel's right. There's a problem here. It needs more study, but indeed there's something there that is causing black kids, smart black kids, to miss some questions on the reading section, and they're showing their smarts by doing very well on questions that don't rely on very simple words.
So do you have another example that the way you described the word slick and its different meanings in different places was very interesting? Do you have another one?
Well, let's think. I mean, tight. In some neighborhoods, like mine, means, you know, you're sort of feeling close in. Tight in other neighborhoods means really together, well-integrated personality. I mean, you can come up with a dozen of them, and the long words we're talking about are things like commensurate and constitution, usually Latinate forms that you don't use on the at home or on the street, but you find in school. It is also an explanation. This is also relevant to the reason why we found several schools around the country who have focused on math instruction for low-income kids, inner-city kids, having much greater progress in raising math scores, because math, again, is something you learn almost exclusively at school, not at home. You're not confused by the math you're learning at home. You don't learn any math at home, but if you give a kid in school the right teaching, it's just as you do give a kid in school the right teaching about reading, you can have great progress. It's just in reading is confused by all the ways we learn to read and learn the language, which is influenced by what we hear at home.
Is there any reaction yet to the new finding from the SATs?
Yeah, the College Board hates them as much now as they did 7 years ago. They're coming up with their own response in all these papers have come out in the Harvard Educational Review. But UC Berkeley, the people there say this is worth looking at, and UC has such power, particularly with the SAT, that over time, if UC sticks with it, I think we may see serious research about this and maybe some changes in the test.
There's a bit of a trend for colleges and universities to drop the SAT as a requirement for admission. How widespread is that?
It's growing steadily. It's now affects about 400 or 500 of the 4,000 colleges out there. It generally is sort of a half reform. You'll find many schools, including some well-known ones, particularly small liberal arts schools in Northeast, that will say, well, if you have a 3.5 grade point average at your high school or higher, then you don't have to turn in your SAT. And that's a smart move, because the grade point average, we know, predicts first-year college grade just about as well as the SAT does. So if you have a good GPA, then the school, the college knows that you're going to be somebody who will do well, and that's all they really use the SAT for. They don't want to admit a kid whose SAT score shows that they're going to just, peel out. Flame out the first year. They want kids can handle college, at least at their level. So that's growing slowly, but, you know, the Ivy League schools haven't gone in that direction yet, and until they do, I doubt that we're going to have a big change. The one virtue of the SAT is a test I don't like very much, but it has one virtue. If you're in a very competitive high school, and a lot of your listeners have kids who are in very competitive private schools and some public schools in the New York area, those parents know and those kids know that a kid who has a B-plus average in one of those schools may be an A student in any other average high school, and the only way for the kid to show that to a college is to have a very good SAT score, and that helps those kids.
Landy in Fleetwood, you're on WNYC. Hello, Landy.
Hi. My question is with regards to whether they look at newly Asian immigrants who grow up in inner cities, have the same language, have the same sort of communication skills as the blacks, and still have been able to score just as well as the whites and have gone to colleges. You can see that, a lot of that example, in California and Texas. Those Asian students tend to speak on a normal, normal affairs, very much like all other inner city school kids, but somehow been able to progress through quite well. Have they looked at that as sort of the outliers?
Jay?
They have looked at Asian scores, and Asians tend to, in these studies, perform just like whites. And so there is not a difference between whites and Asians in looking at these particular questions.
The study is a bit of a cop-out, because those Asian kids tend to communicate and have friends that are black, since inner-city schools tend to be highly populated with the blacks. And those kids, Asians and blacks, have the same teaching guidelines. And they grow up speaking more English, that is, more inner-city language, than with their own native tongues, and still have been able to perform well. So to say that the SAT is biased doesn't pan out in this case.
Well, you have to look at the home situation. I think a lot of Asian families come here, and they seem to be poor, but in many cases, the parents, even though they are poor here, are pretty well educated and have professional jobs in the Asian countries they came from and are trying to, you know, bring themselves back up to that level while they're here. So the level of language spoken in those on those families is pretty traditional. It's not street talk.
I guess we don't know.
That's what influences kids' language development.
And Landy, thank you for your call. I guess she's talking about specifically Asian immigrant kids or Asian American kids who live in urban areas and go to schools with a lot of black kids,
right?
Where they speak some of the same, some of the same language. But you're saying the difference might be what they're hearing at home that makes the Asian students more able to recognize whatever the white bias might be in the verbal portion of the test, correct?
I mean, I've spent a lot of time in the kind of high schools you're talking about, and indeed there are Asian kids who go to the schools and can speak street talk pretty well, but they can instantly switch, as do a lot of black kids, to standard English when they have to, and at home, standard English is demanded, so they're spending a lot of more time with standard English than black kids who, at home, will still be speaking street talk to a certain extent.
Angela in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Angela.
Hi. To your point, I think it has more to do with education in general. It's more the haves and the have-nots. You know, if you're going to say the black kids, then you should say the Latin kids, then you should say basically across the board, it's the poor children that don't get the right education in comparison to, let's say, then the white kids or the Asian kids or the people who are lucky enough to have their parents spend money on them in order to prepare them for the future. I don't know what the exam is now. I've taken it. I took the SAT like 20 years ago, and it was different than it is now. But it is still the haves and the have-nots.
This caller is exactly right. And in my own writing, I don't talk about black, white, or Hispanic. I talk about low-income kids. It's all about the poverty, the drag of poverty on kids' learning. But this particular study was looking at racial differences, and so that's what I had to write about.
You think primarily as a surrogate for class or socioeconomic status?
Right. I mean, you look at poor white kids in Appalachia. And they have the same learning problems that poor black kids do in the South Bronx.
Ben in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ben.
Hi. I think that this thing has some merit to it in the sense that it is socioeconomic, but it's also really primarily ethnic. If I happen to be an Asian American, and I was one of those who went to the high-end high schools in the city of New York and competitively examined. At home, my parents, my father, spoke very little English at all. And the exposure to vocabulary, particularly the, quote, easy vocabulary, is limited in that environment. The key here is that the stress on education is particularly high in those homes. And if you want to call that racial, it is racial. Is it discriminatory? Of course it is. But that's the whole point, is that you have to learn how to develop a strength in that particular aspect of the exam. So is the exam invalid? No, it's just that you have to put the stress on the exam.
And that's absolutely right. I mean, I don't call it racial. I call it cultural. So my wife, who went to an Ivy League school, has created a certain culture in her home, but most of her relatives are poor people from Oklahoma who never went to college, and their culture in their homes is different. And that makes a huge difference when you're talking about how kids learn.
And a similar comment, I think, from Frank from the East Village on our comments page, why change the SAT? Would it hurt to prepare students by teaching the difference between idiomatic expressions and the correct usage of vocabulary? What do you say to him?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. That would be my solution to all this. I've spent my life, the last 25 years, writing about the schools that are doing that, raising the level of low-income kids, tapping into their hidden abilities and getting them to a place where they're prepared for college.
But how much can you do that? I mean, we have about 30 seconds left. Are you saying schools should start teaching the different cultural meanings of words like slick and tight?
No. They should just teach well. The KIPP schools I've written a lot about have now found a way to raise the achievement of kids from inner city level to suburban level just by giving them more time to learn, better teaching. That's the same old way. Great teaching fixes all of this. That's what we need to do.
Do you believe in SAT test prep?
Uh, No, I believe you do a couple of practice tests and you've done your homework and listened in class, you're fine for the SAT.
All right. Jay Matthews, who has been covering the various studies that seem to find bias in the SATs. In 2003, covered it for The Atlantic when that first study that he talked about came out. And these days, he writes the education blog called Class Struggle for The Washington Post. Thank you so much, Jay.
You're welcome, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.